Welcome to this very special edition of the Ready for Launch podcast. I'm Andy McOtter-Bicknell, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Tamara Graminski and Jason Oakley. And today's episode is all about the best competitive launches or the best competitive campaigns. Listen, things are crowded out there, folks. You know, there are so many options for buyers, and we have to do some aggressive marketing that dismisses our competitors. But before we get much further, Tamara, do you want to just give folks a recap of how the show works?
Sure. It is so good to be back. I missed you guys. So this is how the show works. Every episode, we choose a theme. As Andy said, the theme for today's episode is competitive campaigns, competitive launches. And then Andy, Jason, and I each go back, we do some personal research, and we figure out who we think is the best example of that launch. And then we're going to have 7 minutes each to basically present our arguments, try to convince our audience that we have chosen the best launch. And what I love about it so much is that we're actually breaking down and analyzing why these launches work. And hopefully you, the audience, get to learn along the way and get inspired for your own campaigns. And of course, we have the randomizer. We can't forget about the randomizer. So Grayson's going to throw all of our names into a hat and then arbitrarily choose who gets to go first. I still don't believe that this exists. But the most important thing about the show is that there's stakes to this, right? So Jason, tell us a little bit about why it's important to win and who is winning so far after season one.
So why is it important to win? Well, I don't think we all wouldn't be here if we didn't care about winning. So I think in general, we all just want to be the one that brings the best launch to the episode every time. And like you said, every episode we figure out who the winner is based on votes, but also based on us voting for each other. But then at the end of the season, we have a winner. And at the end of this past season, the score was Tamara had 3 wins. I had 3 wins. And apparently Andy had 4.
Apparently.
Right. Well, I don't know. I feel like we have to go back.
Remember that.
Okay. All right. This has been contested. This has been proven. Okay. No cheating. I'm the king of season one, but you know, we're going to try and do things a little bit differently. We're going to end the season here and we're going to determine one final winner. No ties. We don't do ties here. So this is for all the marbles.
That's right.
Please vote for me, everyone.
Andy dressed up.
I dressed up for the occasion.
Of, like, cockiness. I feel like Andy wins. So I feel like that should be a check against Andy.
Oh, okay. Well, listen, I care about the people here. I care about the audience. And so I wanted them to feel like this was a special occasion. It is a special occasion. But without further ado, right, this is all about competitive campaigns. And so we each came to the table with our own picks for what we believe is the best competitive launch of all time. And like Tamara mentioned, we're each going to go randomly and pitch you all for 7 minutes on why we think that this launch is the best. And so, Grayson, anything else you want to add before we pick who goes first?
No, I'd like to please, Tamara, if you could rescind your statement. The randomizer is real, and I will be showing the randomizer. But yes, also, I just want to reiterate, the audience is voting. I will be putting up a QR code, and we'll be sharing a link in chat that you can click on at the end of the presentation so the audience can vote and decide the winner. But yes, without further ado, I will actually screen share the randomizer. So everyone can everyone see the there it is.
I can.
Oh. This is the
lovely, dude, my heart is beating so fast right now. Oh my God. Let's go. Here we go.
I have my mouse over the randomize. I'm going to press it and
the order tomorrow.
Tomorrow's first.
All right.
Let's go, Tamara.
So just also for the audience, just so they know, I will be there's a 7 minute timer. I will start the 7 minute timer. This is also the very advanced timer we have. I will start it. And tomorrow, whenever you're ready, let me know. And I will click it. And
you can begin. I love everyone's getting a real behind the scenes view of this podcast. Okay. I'm ready, Grayson.
Okay.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1.
All right. So I don't think we can talk about competitive campaigns without discussing the infamous Mac versus PC computer wars. And in particular, I want to talk about the Get a Mac campaign. So to do this, I'm going to take us all the way back to 2006. And I feel like I might be aging myself a little bit with this episode, but that's okay. So in 2006, personal computers were on the rise and predicted to be a massive revenue opportunity for whoever could actually win this category. It actually sounds silly to say this out loud because at the time, if you remember and were alive, you would have like one computer in your house and you would maybe use dial-up internet. But there was this trend happening where every family member was starting to get their own personal computer, whether it was a laptop or like a Mac or whatever it might be. And so I did a bit of research and it said that at this time, Pew Research said this, only 30% of Americans actually owned a personal computer in 2006. So what I didn't realize when I started researching for this episode is that the Get a Mac campaign, which I think we're all familiar with, was actually associated with a product launch. And the launch was the Apple's new Intel-based Mac. And this was a significant shift for Apple because it marked this transition point from when they went from older processor chips to Intel chips, making it much faster and much more efficient. And so this campaign in particular really aimed to show this new world of Macs and how it could meet the needs of a broader audience than it had historically. So the Get a Mac campaign actually ran for 66 ad spots, which I had no idea about before, for 3 years, from 2006 to 2009. And it's widely regarded as one of the most effective and memorable competitive campaigns of all time. Here's why I think it works. I'm going to have three categories. I didn't come up with a framework this time, Andy. I'll let you do that. But I have three reasons. So first one is this idea of like personifying the brand. If you've seen the ads, which I'm sure most people have, each ad in the series actually has the same two characters. There's Mac, and he kind of starts with saying, "Hi, I'm Mac." And this is played by Justin Long. And then there's the PC, and you go, "Oh, I'm the PC," and that's played by John Hodgman. And these characters are personifications of the Mac and PC computers. And Mac is portrayed as being super laid back, really creative, approachable. He's always wearing a full hoodie, someone you'd want to be friends with. While PC is being depicted as like buttoned up, stiff, a little awkward, exactly, not the guy you'd want to invite to your office party. So this really made it relatable and allowed Apple to kind of show off some of these more complex features in a relatable way without having to rely on heavy tech jargon, which was really how other brands were marketing at the time. And what I think was best about this is that we actually got really attached to the characters, right? I wanted to tune into every new ad because it felt more like entertainment than an advertisement, which today we know makes sense, but I felt like was really ahead of its time in 2006. Second reason that it works is that they chose a few key themes and they followed these themes throughout all of the ad spots. And this allowed them to build continuity over the course of 3 years, tell different stories, but not have to say the same thing over and over again. So here's the themes I picked out. And I went back and watched a bunch of these ads. The first one is this idea of ease of use. So Mac is always shown as the simpler, more user-friendly option, and it's always contrasted with like the complexity associated with a PC. And going back to that clunkiness, like things just feel overly hard with the PC. The second theme that I think is the most prominent theme is this idea of Mac is built for life, right? This campaign tapped into Mac's reputation for really being a tool for the everyday person, not just a business professional. And so it positioned these Apple products like they did with the iPod when it came out as well. They really positioned it as like an enabler of creativity. You can listen to music, you could edit your photos, and you could do your work on it as well. And there's this really funny ad that I was watching last night, and basically PC's in it. And he's like, "I want to know, like, why can't I edit photos?" And he's like asking the PC team behind him. And they go, "You don't care about arts and crafts. You just like to work." And I think it makes it so clear. It's like, no one associates that. No one just likes to work, right? So you really start to see yourself more as a Mac than a PC. And then the third theme is this idea of reliability and security. I remember this myself from the time. Many of the ads were highlighting these issues that were commonly plaguing PCs, like viruses, frequent errors. And I remember I actually had a Mac as my first laptop. And that was one of the reasons I was like, I don't need virus software, I'm fine, I have a Mac. Okay, the third reason why I think this works is the playful tone. And this really comes down to the competitive space. And competitive campaigns are always a balancing act between demonstrating your unique value while being respectful of the competition, or at least for me it is, right? And I think that Apple handled this well. They were playful. They used comedy and humor to kind of almost make light of the computer wars. The computer wars were something that was being talked about well beyond just these ads. And so they're poking fun of the rivalry, which was allowing them to kind of strike a chord with both people who are really into the computer like wars, like those tech kind of specialists and enthusiasts, as well as just the average consumer like I was at the time. So the ad didn't focus on attacking Microsoft directly. If you watch it, it kind of pokes fun and then uses it as a contrast. So through contrast, they kind of demonstrate the power of Apple rather than saying they said we're amazing. So did it work? Well, I think it did. At the end of the 2006 fiscal year, which was just a couple of months after they launched the first ad, Apple reported an overall increase in sales of 39%. And actually won in 2007, it won the most successful marketing campaign by the Effie Awards. And they claimed that it was responsible, this kind of ad campaign was responsible for market share growth of 42% since the start of the campaign, which was less than a year earlier. And they actually wrote a sentence in the award statement that I loved. And they said, they managed to do it with humor, class, and honesty without falling into the trap of overtly negative competitive advertising. And I think this really did set the tone for a lot of future competitive campaigns to come. Plus, I hate to say this out loud, but it's almost been 20 years since these ads first started, and we're still talking about it. So I would say that I think it's made its mark. And that's my closing argument.
Nice. Well done.
Thank you.
Very well done.
Nice.
Very well done. That was my first introduction to Apple, I think, and HP back. So what did you say? It was 2006?
2006. When they did
that? Okay. Yeah. And that's so I mean, not only was that a great example of like, you know, bringing some like humanity to your brand, but I also loved it's a great example of like positioning your competitor. Yeah. For mm-hmm. that, you know what I mean? Like you're very, not only are they positioning themselves as Justin Long, but they're positioning HP as like this totally separate, like almost opposite kind of persona. And I think that that's something that a lot of brands forget to do. Like you are allowed to position your competitor. And they did a really great job of doing so, really creative way of doing it. So that was my favorite part.
Yeah. I liked your second point tomorrow where you talked about how when you watch that like every commercial that they did around that theme, it was, not only were you able to see the difference between like the two products, but you were able to really kind of be like, I'm more like Justin Long. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you see yourself in it and I definitely feel like I watched those commercials and I was like, yeah, I'm more like that guy, or I want to be more like that guy. I don't want to be like that guy. And I think that there was, I feel like a lot of things are focused on product, where with that series, I think they did a really good job of focusing on like the people who use their products too, like who the best people, like who their target market is. And you know, the types of people, like they always had that other series too, here's the crazy ones. And that same sort of idea is like Mac is built, or Apple products are for these types of people. But I feel like that series actually gave a face and like a personality to the actual people who use Mac products. And it's Justin Long. You're gonna love Justin Long.
Exactly. He wasn't even that famous at the time though, which is crazy. But I do love it. And I think, Jason, to your point, because there are 66 different ads, they actually were able to play into different personas and ICPs in each ad. And so there were some more ads there. It was definitely more relevant for like a student at the time, or someone who used their computer at home, as opposed to some very professional business workers. And it was kind of funny to go back and watch all of them, but they did a really good job of identifying with the person, and then they would highlight the feature or use case that would resonate most with you. Mm. But as I mentioned, every video really was connected in some way. My first like computer was a MacBook. What about you guys?
It was a MacBook. Yeah. My family had like a personal, we had like a computer room. Yeah. Anybody remember those?
In the den, sort of.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a computer room, but then like when I graduated high school, like I needed to get a MacBook. And I, you know, if you ask me, like, I couldn't even tell you why. Like, I don't think I knew any reason other than like, no, it has to be a MacBook. And so it definitely like made a mark on me for sure.
Mine was a Toshiba.
Ooh. Nice. Nice. Are those still around? Can you still buy Toshibas?
I don't know. Mine is probably kicking around here somewhere.
All right.
I remember I had that thing years after, wouldn't turn on anymore.
Yeah. Got to keep it around just in case. It's like one of those things you're afraid to, like, what are you supposed to do with it when you're done with it? You know?
Like my old Razor flip phone, but now.
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
People are bringing back their Blackberries though. So I feel like something's got to come back.
True. Something's got to come back.
Okay. Great stuff. Who's up next? I need to pay attention because I just saw myself at the top of the list.
Well, Your boy's up next.
Next up is Andy. So
let's get it.
Andy, I'm going to share the screen here where you can see the timer starting.
All right. And Grayson, I have the two assets that I'm going to share with you. I'll tell you when to share them. Okay.
Perfect. Sounds great. Okay. You're good to go. Thumbs up.
I am so good to go. I've never been more good to go in my life. Here we go.
All right.
Ready?
Three, two, one.
All right. So for my pick, you know, I'm not going to mince any words. All right, maybe I'll mince a few words. This campaign was just, you know, it not only was it the best competitive campaign, it was arguably the best ad campaign, period. It helped a business close a massive market share gap. It increased revenue. And perhaps most importantly, it shifted our perspective, right? Our collective perspective that number two might actually be better than number one. That's right, folks. My choice is the We're Number Two campaign from Avis Car Rentals. And folks, if you thought the computer wars were crazy, wait till you hear about the rental car wars because things get wild. I mean, what more can we say about this campaign that hasn't already been said? Iconic, psychological, memorable. It's got everything that you want in a campaign, and it just so happens to be competitive, okay? So here's the backstory. Back in the 1950s and 60s, the number one player by a mile in the rental car space was Hertz. They held an estimated 61% of the market compared to Avis's 29%. And Avis knew that they had to get creative if they wanted to close that gap. Grayson, why don't you go ahead and put up the Avis image, and I'll keep talking while you're doing that. So rather than doing what businesses do, which is typically, you know, lie and claim that they are number one, even though, you know, everyone knows that they're not, they went against the grain and they launched a campaign that was wholly dedicated to the fact that they are number two, which means that they try harder for their customers. They have to, right? Now, this is one of those things where, you know, we think about the concept and we think, oh yeah, you know, obvious move, smart, you know, makes total sense. If you're in that camp, actually, you know what, regardless of if you're in that camp, I want you to close your eyes and imagine that you're pitching your CEO a new campaign concept. You walk up to their desk and you say, "Hi, Mr. or Ms. CEO. I think it'd be a great idea to just shout from the rooftops that we are the number two business in our category." Right? You know, it actually makes me a little uncomfy just sitting here thinking about that. It's a super risky move. And especially too, when you think about this time period, right? This is the early 60s. And things were very macho, and Americans had really been associating bigger with better. And it was because of all of those things that made this campaign stand out and bring a ton of attention to Avis. And it caused an impact pretty much immediately. So much so that Avis leaned in and launched different variants of the same campaign with headlines like, "Avis can't afford half empty gas tanks. Avis can't afford to make you wait. Avis can't afford smudge mirrors." And they even, this is my favorite one, they even wrote an ad called Number Two-ism, the Avis Manifesto. And yes, as a reminder, we're still just talking about rental cars, folks. Okay, a rental car company has their own manifesto now, and it's awesome. I'll read a short little excerpt from it. Okay, the number one attitude is don't do the wrong thing. Don't make mistakes and you'll be okay. The number two attitude is do the right thing. Look for new ways. Try harder. Number two-ism is the Avis doctrine and it works. Number twos of the world arise. It's insane. It's so good. Just a manifesto for number twos in the world. So anyway, to continue with the story, these ads began in 1962 and Avis punched up and up and up at Hertz for years until by 1966, this is 4 years later, the market share gap reduced from 32 points in Hertz's favor to just 13. So this was a massive turnaround in a really short amount of time. So much so that Hertz decided that they needed to break the golden rule and they needed to stop ignoring the ads and they punched down. And this is the part that a lot of people don't know about, okay? Like I think a lot of us have probably seen these We're Number Two ads, but a lot of people don't know about what Hertz actually published as a rebuttal. Now, Grayson, would you mind sharing the other image that I shared with you from Hertz? Okay, so Hertz actually published a rebuttal ad And I'd argue that it's also very good. The headline reads, "For years, Avis has been telling you Hertz is number one. Now we're going to tell you why." And underneath, their copy walks readers through exactly that. And to be honest, for me personally, you know, if I'm reading this objectively and not in like a, oh, no, you know, never punch down, you know, marketing perspective, I'd say it actually does a pretty good job of dismissing all of Avis's claims. And sure enough, you know, it must have resonated with readers at the time because it was around that time when the market share eventually stabilized and Hertz was able to confidently retain their position as number one. So yes, it wasn't a Cinderella story for Avis, but I argue that it doesn't matter. Their campaign is still widely regarded as one of the best ever. The concept has influenced other companies like Apple, Pepsi, Domino's, and others. Of course, it helped them increase the market share too, right? Solidify that number two position for decades to come. And oh, I almost forgot. It was such a successful campaign that it became ingrained in their company positioning, and they trademarked the phrase, "We try harder." More than half a century after it went live, they still have a landing page on their website today in 2024 that talks about why they try harder and their commitment to customers. And I can't think of another competitive campaign that has had not only such a massive impact on a business's bottom line, but also their positioning and identity as a whole. What do you guys think?
Nice. Bravo. Well done. Yeah, I think the one thing that sticks out to me there is like I know one of the things you always say too, Andy, like when you are creating a comparison page, for example, it's like that honesty of where you are, like where they might be better than you or like where your weaknesses might be. It's like a really, this is like that in a campaign. Like this is a very honest campaign. And it like takes the honesty and then turns that to their advantage, which is
cool. Yeah. David Ogilvy, famous like ad man from back in like the 60s, he called this diabolical positioning, where you take almost like your, like the strength of your competitor and you like flip it around so that it's actually a strength for you. He gave a couple of other examples. Like I think like Mini Cooper, like around the same time, like, you know, all these cars at the time were getting like big and big and big. And then Mini Cooper went the opposite direction and they like did a campaign where like it really just like accented like how small they were compared to everyone else. And there's a few other examples of that, you know, as time went on. But it's a cool way of like thinking through, right, your competition and thinking like, are there strengths? Like actually there's strengths. Definitely a cool exercise to go through.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that you mentioned that this has actually become so ingrained into like the corporate culture that it's still pervasive today. And it's like on their website, because I do think sometimes when you're in the second spot or the third spot or whatever spot you're, there's a obvious winner. It can feel like a scramble versus kind of how I interpret your argument is they took a step back and they're like, okay, we're not number one. We might never be number one, but how do we get like a fighting chance? And it's almost like a come to Jesus moment of like, okay, what is our actual strength? Where can we compete? And for them, it was obviously this like, we'll try harder. And that meant a bunch of different things. And then, you know, imagine they never even considered this campaign. That might have shaped the whole future trajectory of the company, which is fascinating, right? As you said, it's now their slogan. And sometimes we need these moments of like the underdog story a bit. We need to feel humble to be like, okay, what is our core? Like, what do we really believe? And how do we live that in everything that we do, not just our marketing campaign, but how we run the business, all of that.
Yeah. It's like, it's one of those, it goes back to that principle of like, what can you say that your main competitor can't say? And then just try to like really lead with that as much as possible. I love that element of it. It's always hard because with so many of these campaigns, you know, we try to like bring together like ROI and like stats to the board. And there was like one piece too, where I can't like 100% back it up, but it was something like they were actually losing money, like somewhere like around $1 million per year up to this point. And then when they, after 1962, when they launched it, they were earning like a $2 or $3 million profit after this time. And so I don't know how much of that correlates with like an ad campaign versus like other elements of the business, but it's always super interesting to hear about those things too.
Yeah. Well, maybe one final thought, I see great things back up, but one final thought I had around this is just reflecting on the two examples you and I shared. It's interesting how neither of these were just like one moment in time, a 1 month campaign. They were thoughtful, reflections on how can we actually compete, and then like repetitive go to market around that language, those value props, that differentiation over, in both of our cases, multiple years. And so I think one of the lessons I'm already taking away from this episode is like, you can't expect it to work in like a one-time campaign. It is something that maybe is a longer term play, but
the old rolling thunder, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's rolling thunder.
I would agree.
Launch. I love it.
Yeah. That's a cool one.
Okay. The final one, Jason.
Whew. Here we go, baby.
You ready?
I'm going to share.
No pressure.
No. You going to count me down?
Yep. Thumbs up. Good to go.
Ready.
All right. Bring it home, Jason. All right. Three, all right. Two, one.
Okay. So my campaign is referred to as Best Phones Forever. If you go to YouTube and you search hashtag Best Phones Forever, it's a campaign from Google and it's for its Pixel phone. And so this is, you all heard tomorrow's Mac versus PC, kind of takes a page out of that, but it's actually giving Apple a taste of its own medicine, which is pretty cool. So in this case, Pixel is the innovator, iPhone is the laggard, the old and busted. So what is this campaign? It's mostly based around a video series. So it's been also been running, to your point, Andy and Tamara, it's been running for over a year, right? So this thing has legs. I actually covered it in PMM files like over a year ago. And at that time, they had posted six videos. They'd been live for 4 days and they already had 40 million views on YouTube. But since then, they've done a series of about 20, now it's 24. So they did one for Diwali the other day. So that's like 3 days ago was the latest video that they posted. Those videos now have over hundreds of millions of views collectively. And they've also inspired like 400 plus videos and shorts from just people in the community, inspired content around that hashtag that just use the hashtag alone. So that's only on YouTube. It's also spilled over into like Instagram, which I'll touch on a little bit, and other platforms as well. But I think the big difference with this one and the two campaigns you talked about is like this campaign having been like in the last year is also taking advantage of like social media today and the virality and the community aspect of things. So we'll talk about that a bit. So the whole concept is this ad turns Pixel and iPhone into like real characters with their own personality. And they are best pals. So it's also a super cute series. So Pixel just looks out for iPhone. iPhone has like, you kind of like self-confidence issues and those sorts of things. But the whole series is really just bait. iPhone is bait for Pixel and Google to call out all the weaknesses of the iPhone and everything that's good about Pixel and better about Pixel. So that each video touches on at least one specific key differentiator with the Pixel. So it could be that Pixel has a VPN, better security. It could be a lot of them touch on AI, right? And how Pixel uses Google Gemini and has like way more advanced AI capabilities. Could be about a specific feature. There's a whole video on circle to search, which is like a very like a lot of people love that feature in Pixel. Longer battery life, better camera, all that stuff. But it does it in such a cute way. So like, yeah, in B2B world, a lot of competitive campaigns can, they're not that entertaining. They're not that cute. This one is very, very cute. And if you watch one video, you want to watch the rest. In these types of things, people might be like, and even with the Mac versus PC, they might be like, hey, you're giving too much attention to the category leader. But what I feel about campaigns like this is like iPhone is already like everyone knows it's a category leader. They have roughly give or take around 50% market share in mobile phones. But people also know, and there's also this like widely held feeling that the iPhone is expensive and getting more expensive. It hasn't really innovated that much. No big swing innovations in recent years. And maybe it's losing its cool factor. Maybe there's another one that's going to take its place as like the cool new phone. So when you think of their positioning strategy, like each one of these videos is very clearly positioning the Pixel against the iPhone, right? Like it's clear as day and they do a really great job of it. One of the big themes is speed to innovate. And so they paint Pixel as being the new innovative mobile phone. And that iPhone is like just falling behind. And so every, like basically iPhone is like jealous of Pixel and all of its new create like innovative things. To prove that, each one does touch on specific like features and capabilities. Like the ones I talked before, a lot of them touch on AI and they also show it. So like they do a great job of actually demonstrating these things because they got the two phones up there and they can actually show the stuff, which is really cool. Another big theme, like even with the launch of Pixel and why it's been successful is price point. And so like a specific example of that is in Japan, but also the US, but Japan is one thing that I'd read about and specifically Rising phone prices, especially with the iPhone, each one seems to get more and more expensive. It's actually pushing people, because people are just becoming more price sensitive to phones, it's pushing them more towards like budget phones. And Pixel has a 6A and 7A, which are among the best budget phones. And so people are starting to move towards that. And I'll get to a stat later that talks about a bit of the market share change in Japan specifically. A couple of things I like about this campaign. It's entertaining, fun, heartwarming. Like, we're in B2B SaaS mostly, and we're just surrounded by a lot of competitive campaigns that are like dull at best. Sometimes they can even just get a little bit like nasty in some cases. And so it's cool to see one that's just fun, heartwarming. It's also long lasting. And so like all the campaigns here, long lasting, it takes advantage of events, holidays, it hops on trends. So they have video around Olympics, one around Super Bowl, one around Christmas, right? So they're taking advantage and making this like basically a thing that has staying power. And they're just taking advantage of trends and events that are happening on the web. And then they're making videos around that. Each video is very clear with its positioning. And so I touched on that. Another thing is that it's viral. It's community focused and it brings people in. So one thing that they did, and this was actually on Instagram, they did this campaign. It was called Best Phones Forever AI Road Trip. So they actually went on Instagram. They made one post and they said, everyone submit your ideas. Pixel and iPhone are going on a road trip. Submit your ideas. And we're going to create videos using AI. And in one day, they created 300 mini episodes based on the community submitting ideas. And then they used Google's AI to actually create these videos, which then also showed off the capability of the product, which is cool. The last thing there on virality is that because it's on YouTube, because it's taking advantage of that channel, it's a playlist. So you watch one video, you're going to be served up all the others. So even though the first video was created over a year ago, it is still getting views today. It's still getting a lot of traffic and it's still doing work for the campaign as a whole. And so where the Mac versus PC campaigns, they were on TV. Someone couldn't be like, I want to watch every single one of these. Now they can with this stuff, which is cool. So a couple of the results. So again, keep in mind that Pixel is a newer phone. But in 2022, they're at 3.6% market share in the US. The end of 2023, that was up to 4.6. The beginning of 2024, that was at 5%. But a couple things to know. Google is the only major Android manufacturer to grow market share in US in 2023. And that was despite an overall drop in mobile phone sales of 14%. In Japan specifically, which is the world's third biggest economy, Pixel's market share is 12%. And that was this year. And Apple's market share declined at the same period, 58% to 46%. So anyways, lots there. They continue to put out videos, hundreds of millions of views and counting. And I think this thing has staying power and I think it's a good campaign for that reason.
Good job. Well done.
That's so cute. I feel so bad for the little iPhone.
I know, me too.
If you watch some of these,
there's like that. I don't like that.
I love that. Yeah. That's the cool part. Okay, listen, like, hear me out. We have like different elements for each of these campaigns that make them great. For Avis and Hertz, I think the main piece is like honesty, right? That was like kind of like the thing that made it different and memorable. For Mac versus PC, I feel like, you know, personifying the brand and humanity. You know, those were like the real pillars of it. And for this one, it's like personifying the devices themselves, not just like the brand and cuteness. And I love that cuteness is such like a core piece of this. It's so important. Like, it sounds simple, but it's so important for this.
And is Best Phones Forever like a play on Best Friends Forever? Like,
totally. I think so. Yeah.
That's so cute.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that before this.
I think that there's more to it than just being cute, but I think the cuteness,
of course,
right? Just like the overall entertainment factor of the videos makes them viral, like makes people want to binge them and makes them people want to share them and talk about them. But like that whole theme of Best Phones Forever, you know, goes through to like their website. There's like a specific landing page for that. It comes into like other platforms and other content, I remember when I first saw it, I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's the thing too. I really don't want to downplay like the cuteness part because it also, it's very like of the time, you know, where like, I think a lot of the media that we consume right now, at least over the past like 10 years, has been very like serious and like gritty and like, you know, like, you know, all that kind of, and so I feel like this is like a very, like a big shift to, you know, making things like a little bit just like more fun and more like we said, cute and like not super like life or death kind of a thing. Yeah, that's why I love it so much. It's so good.
One thing you didn't message or mention, and I haven't watched these videos, so one question I actually get asked a lot by people who watch our show is, do you guys actually know what everyone's going to say ahead of time? And we don't. Like, we will share who we're choosing, but we don't do research into each other. So, like, I've never watched these videos. I'm going to go watch after. But the one thing that struck me as you were saying this, and I don't know if this is a theme in it or not, is this idea of, like, traditionally, iPhones have not been thoughtful of, like, being paired well with any other phone. Do you know what I mean? And vice versa. And this idea of, like, best phones forever almost makes me feel... it seems reassuring that, oh, the friends do work well together. So if my friend does have an iPhone, we can still be best friends. Like, I don't know if that comes down in the videos, but that was the first thing I thought of. And I was like, oh, I actually think that's really clever of, like, breaking down this wall of, like, iPhones, like, Apple products work with Apple products. They don't work well with other products and vice versa. And it's almost breaking down that ecosystem, like, walled garden play that Apple
That's has. True.
And again, I could be wrong, but that was what struck me. And I was like, oh, that is cool. They can be friends. Like,
I never thought of it that way. That's very true though.
There's actually one of the videos in particular, because I do think that, Apple kind of operates in this, especially when it came to, like, I think SMS and stuff like that. They're in their own kind of world, and it's not as easy for Android and Apple people to, like, communicate over SMS. But I think they changed that recently. And so Google actually did a video where Pixel is actually being like, good job, iPhone. Like, welcome to the real world. Like, it's I think it's like called groundbreaking or something, groundbreaking communication or something. Watch that one.
Okay, I'll watch that.
But it is a good point.
The other piece that I thought was really interesting is we each picked one a campaign or a launch that was from pretty like fairly different time periods, right? Like mine was in the 60s. Tomorrow, yours was in like the 2000s. Jason, your started like last year and. Yep. They're all great in their own way, but they leverage different mediums. So like, Tamara, like TV, Jason, like YouTube and Instagram and stuff like that. Mine were like, just like paper ads. And so it's been cool to see like how they like evolved over time. That's been kind of my favorite part of like, of hearing all these, like that community element that you talked about, Jason, of like people like sharing their ideas and then Google using AI to generate different versions of those commercials. Like that would have obviously never been possible, years ago. And so that like incorporating those elements into the competitive campaign, I think that's super cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. And like, I think the Mac versus PC, like if that was done today, right. If those videos were Justin Long and the other guy were like, I think those would also kind of go with this extremely well. Like it's a similar kind of campaign. It's just a different, it's like shows a different time, different technology, like different tools. You can do a lot of different things.
I don't want to say the best phones forever ripped off my campaign, but it does feel like they ripped off.
The thing that was different.
It's so great though, how it's used against Mac products.
Yeah. Yeah.
Apple products. I love it.
That's what I'm saying though. Like that whole piece of like it was like Mac versus PC. It was like a very like brand centric play. Right. Mm-hmm. And it worked because like, I thought of like, you know, I think of like Apple versus PC, like any of these other kind of like brands, but then like it for Jason's, it was very much like a product specific, like personifying like the phones, which was very interesting to think about. So yeah.
Yeah. I don't know the like legality wise, like how they're able to do that and like put an iPhone there, but
I know.
I'll look into that.
Yeah.
Some lawyer, if you're watching, please send us an email.
Tell us how that works.
So we get to the most exciting part of the live episode.
Let's go.
Those were fantastic presentations, but now it's time to decide a winner. Momentarily, it should be now, there will be a link that will show up in the chat bar. I'm also going to screen share a QR code if you have a phone. And you would like to do it from your phone, you can also join and do the polling. So I will screen share it now. One second, folks. Here is a QR code.
Y'all know what to do.
And then,
you know, do the right thing.
There should be a link put in chat. There it is now. Everyone, please vote away.
Your vote matters. Everyone's vote matters. No bots. No bots allowed. No fraud.
Yeah.
This is the real deal.
And we're not voting for each other, right?
No.
So I don't even know. Oh, I didn't. Oh, hold on.
No, I don't think we are. We're not. But you know what? Usually we kind of message Grace and we say who we would vote for. We're not doing that part.
Oh, we're not doing that today? Okay.
Are we, Grayson?
Well, you don't have to.
But yeah, we're not doing that. We're not doing
that. I'm going to stop screen sharing just to look at the results myself.
Okay.
Because the one that you had in the chest, use the crew card, you used it, but.
Dude, my hands are shaking a little bit. Like when are we going to announce this?
I think you'd be wise, right?
Okay. Well, get to it, buddy. Come on.
Well, the results are still coming in. There's actually.
Oh, my God.
It's okay. Like Survivor. These days, Survivor, ooh, they just do it right on the final episode.
They do.
You still watch Survivor?
Yeah. We're big in it.
Hold on. Is that a Canadian thing? Or like, is that still big everywhere? Big.
Survivor's big.
Okay. There's right. Who's catching Love is Blind tonight? The reunion. That's what I'm interested in. Ooh, yeah, there he is, Grayson. Yeah, the reunion. It's live. I don't know if it's live. They screwed it up a couple years ago, so I don't know if they're doing it live anymore. But that's what your boy's watching. Yep. Yeah, that's my Survivor night. Love is Blind. Yep.
That's for your other podcast, Andy, where you break down Love is Blind.
Let's get it. I'm down. Who wants to start it? Start it up.
There's lots of those.
Well, the results are still coming in. Sorry to cut off the Love is Blind talk, but it seems like there is a winner. So I am probably going. I don't.
We're just going to call it early. Let's just call it early.
Oh, no. That doesn't go well.
Who's been declared the winner?
Shall I share? Oh, this is exciting. Do we want, okay.
Grayson, dude, my palms are sweaty.
Like we did in the show, shall we do a drum roll?
Yeah.
I've been doing it.
All right, drum roll.
Here we go.
And.
Oh,
who is it?
Apples get a mat. Bye, Tamara.
Oh,
well done, Tamara.
Thank you to all of my followers.
Fake news. Fake news.
I've dragged this moment my entire life.
I demand a recount.
Thanks, everyone who voted.
It's the best one. Tamara with
well done, Tamara.
I'm going camera off.
We don't actually have a winner of the season.
No, I just won.
No, I think we're tied.
It's 4-4. It's 4-4-3.
We're tied now, yeah.
Or is this like you just kind of wipe the slate clean?
We'll just wait till next year, then I guess we'll resume.
start from scratch. That was very exciting. That was fantastic. Wow. What a photo finish there.
Yeah. Wow. That was a good one.
Oh, what? The photo finish. It seems like I kind of won by our
minutes. I'm rethinking my entire identity right now. So everyone just excuse me.
Oddly, that was probably the episode, the best episode for least amount of technical glitches. And it was the one that we did live.
Yeah. We should do this every single time. That's the fix right here. We just like, that was clean. Just good job, everyone.
One take.
Well played. And we had assets. We had,
I know. Yeah.
Incredible.
That's
the cut print. Yeah, do it.
Well, thank you everyone for joining. Thank you everyone that voted. Really appreciate it. That was a lot of fun. Tomorrow we'll be sending your crown in the mail. But thank you everyone for watching. First live ever Ready for Launch episode. It would be exciting to do this again one day.
Thanks everyone.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.